Gosh, so good. I mean, there have been some really significant changes. I don't think I spoke to you since my mom died. My mom died a couple of years ago. She had this little bump on the back of her neck, and she was having some neck pain, and it wasn't going away. And I remember taking her to the doctor. She wasn't sleeping. I didn't know this, but she was sleeping in a chair, like an Adirondack chair. I don't know if you know what that was. It's kind of a reclined chair that they use around campfires and stuff. But that's how she was sleeping because this thing on the back of her neck was hurting her so much. And long story short, it was cancer and she was sick. It was terminal. And she was stage four when they found it. Her body was just riddled with it and she never knew, no signs. And then she got this little bump, and that was a tumor protruding out the back of her neck. And it was so high that I was really afraid that if it got any bigger, it would paralyze her. But that's not how she went out though. But yeah, she was sick for 22 days. And as soon as we got the diagnosis, she was like, well, I just hope it goes quick. And she wasn't afraid. Thank God, because that would have been really hard on me. But I slept next to her the whole time and gave her all her medications and just took good care of her. And I had gotten hypnotherapy certified, and I use that in my practice now. And towards the end, I could tell she was having trouble letting go. Her breathing was changing dramatically, but she was like hanging on. And so my aunt, who had come up from Mexico, my mom is from Mexico City, she had come up to be with us, and she was like, oh, you should do hypnosis with your mom and help her to let go. And that's what I did. And it was so amazing. It was like a beautiful morning. And she was in this, it was the light was shining on her face, and there's like a little lake outside her window with the geese on it. It was in November, so it was cold, and there was like all this, mist on the water. And I took her through this hypnosis where I was separating her body from her spirit. I was like, your body's getting heavier and heavier, and your spirit is getting lighter and lighter. Your heart is slowing, your breathing is stopping. And I opened my eyes and I was like, oh my God, this is actually working. And I just went on for a little while, and I heard the geese lift off. I had my eyes closed. I heard the geese lift off the water, and I opened my eyes and she was gone.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I know. And it was, I got to tell you, John, it was probably the singular most precious moment of my life. It was just me and my mom.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was really sweet. It was hard. And then I turned into a different person. I was like, she had some money. So I was like, okay, I quit. I quit. I was like so distraught. I like lost all purpose and ambition, and so it's been almost 2 years. I'm starting to feel like myself again, but that was a dark 2 years.
I was gonna say
But
is, I mean, it's an amazing story, but very sad. Beautiful, but as well.
it was really precious. And I was just so grateful for her example, for how she was able to handle it. Like, she did it with so much grace and courage. She just like one day was like, yeah, I'm not eating anymore. She didn't say it, but I'd be like, Mom, you want some soup? You want some? She's like, nope. Nope.
Just done.
Yeah, she was done.
Yeah.
She's like, all done.
Did
Like,
she
she
have
just
like a belief? Did she have like a spiritual belief, or was that what you were helping her with?
No, she I wonder if she was like a little bit agnostic. I think if she got like she had always like dabbled in church and like a Christian religion. She always kind of dabbled, but I never really knew where her heart really was. But I think she might have had some spiritual beliefs. Like, I'm not religious either, but I think there's something. But I don't feel like, oh, if you don't do this specific ritual in this certain specific way, then you're going to be left out. You're
Nah.
going to burn, like,
I think we're in
no.
agreement there.
Yeah. If you don't jump 10 times, spin around, touch your toes, and say these words, you can't get in.
If you're not on that team, then you're excluded.
Right? Like, just my luck, I was born on the right side of the planet and was exposed to the right one. No.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Do you know what? I'm gonna pull the shades down. The sun's coming
That's
in and
yeah, no problem.
hold on, sorry. Like, oh, it's been cloudy, but so I was like, oh, it's gonna get bright here in a second.
So since then, what's been going on? So what you where were you that when that happened? You
So
were
we were here in
there.
Idaho.
Okay.
Yeah, and my mom had moved out here, so she was 4 minutes away.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, she bought this beautiful, she sold her house. So I grew up in a town called Sunnyvale, California, and that's like in the heart of Silicon Valley. That's like where all the big tech companies are. Actually went to high school in Cupertino, where the Apple computers were started. And so she bought her little house in Sunnyvale for like $50,000 and sold it. She had seven offers that were all 200,000 over asking. Yeah, like all cash offers. It was crazy. So
Wow.
she sold that house for almost $2 million and then bought a couple houses out here. She bought one for herself and then she bought one for my sister because she was like, I don't want to live with your sister anymore. Like my sister, older sister was living with her. She's like, yeah, I'm done. So she bought her own house. It's like, mom, if you're going to be paying her rent, you might as well buy a house so you can rent it out at some whatever tax write-off or whatever. So I had to take my mom had started her will, like her living trust. She started it just before she got diagnosed. So I took her to the attorney's office to finish signing the papers, and they had to come out to the car. My mom couldn't even get out of the car. She was so sick. My mom gave the house to my sister, and then I had like the equivalent. So I was like, yeah, I'm not gonna do anything I don't want to do anymore. You know, it's like I'm 55 now. But like at 53, I was like, I'm not gonna do anything that I don't want to do anymore. You know, there were some clients that were challenging. I let them go. You know, this whole struggling and striving and ambition, trying to create a business and gain a following on social media. I was like, yeah, I'm done. I'm not doing any of
Cool.
that.
That's awesome. So because prior to that, you were when I last spoke to you, you were kind of like the social media stuff and the kind of like spiritual element of the of your life was gaining quite a lot of momentum. But at the same time, you were working in kind of like corporate, some kind of corporate
Oh
sales.
my God, was I still working corporate
Yeah,
back then? Holy shit.
I mean that
Yeah.
was probably nearly might have been nearly 4 years ago.
Oh yeah, that makes sense, right? So it was kind of a cool story. I decided I was like, God did not put me on this planet to sell security software. That's what I was in
Yeah,
high tech sales.
that's right.
I was an account executive for like 10 years. And I was like, I was drastically out of alignment with my authenticity. Like I was, and I felt so guilty about it and hated it. I love the money, but I hated the job. So I was getting my coaching certification in 2019, and I love the like law of attraction type of stuff. And I was like, my work laptop password was new job 2020. I had, you know, we were moving out to Idaho, and a friend of mine rang me up, and my old boss, and he was like, what are you doing for work when you get to Idaho? And I'm like, I don't know. And he goes, well, I'm at this new startup with the CEO that was a friend of mine. And he goes, me and Justin want to create a job for you. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, we're going to create a job for you. So I was the only one that was. So anyway, they created this job for me, and it was a company that sold VPN, virtual private networks. And I worked at the enterprise level. So I'm all new job 2020, get my coaching certification. I'm like, I don't know how this is all going to work out, but it's going to work out. And then COVID hits, and every single customer I had to make a purchase. Every single one. So I made more money in the first 3 months of the year than I had, or was it the first 3 months? I think January, March. I think by March or April, I had hit my annual number. And I made the most money I ever made. The company did so well that it got acquired, and then they laid off the entire inside sales team in December. In December. And so I had basically 2 years worth of salary in the bank to build my business, like moving forward. It was wild. It was wild. Yeah. So then I was full time in 2020.
Yeah. And then what
Yeah.
happened after that then?
And then so then I was then I've been coaching and I was writing a book and I've just had, the podcast. I'm still doing the One Day at a Time podcast, and that's been going well. I've had some really amazing guests. I met Elizabeth Gilbert at this women's conference. I don't know if you're familiar with her. She wrote Eat, Pray, Love and a book. My favorite was, I actually never read Eat, Pray, Love. I saw the movie, but she wrote a book called Big Magic, and it's all about spirituality and kind of, there's some kind of law of attraction stuff in there, but it's detachment from the idols, like that, letting go of that neediness and getting in touch with your creativity. So anyway, she invited herself on because I was at the same table having dinner with her, and I told her about my podcast, and she had started a 12-step program for love addiction. And she's like, oh my God, it's my favorite thing to talk about. I'd love to come on to your podcast. I was like, oh my God. So
Oh.
that was pretty, yeah, it was pretty amazing. So I'm still doing that, but like writing the book. So the book is a 12-step guide for skeptics, because after interviewing people for almost 8 years now, I realized that there are all these mental barriers for people going through the 12-step process. It's things like a higher power or powerlessness. The word alcoholic, there's a lot of barriers that keep people out. And then there are some things that happen within that people end up leaving. And so I was like, you know what? Every time somebody comes on my podcast and talks about why they didn't do it, you can still get sober without it. I'm not saying you can't. Or even that if you do the 12-step process, you'll stay sober. But the premise of the book is that there are ways to sort of get past the hurdle so that you can still have like that transformative experience, because the hill I will die on is that the 12 steps are very, it's like a, I keep using the word magical, and I had this attorney correct me. She's like, no, you do work and then you get a result, right? You take action. I was like, okay, but it feels magical.
The result's
So that's the premise of the book. And then I'm working on the epilogue right now to talk about how the 12 steps have affected my life in different areas over the last, it'll be 30 years in April.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Yeah.
30
So
years.
yeah, 30 years.
You got like a day over 30 yourself.
Yeah, I got a new
Silver
camera.
thinking
I got a
ball.
great filter. Oh, great from far away.
That's amazing. 30 years, wow, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
Yeah.
how's the book coming along? Is it finished? Is there
So
more?
I did the first shitty draft, and I had developmental editors give me some feedback. And so I had to rewrite it. And then, so I'm about 55,000 words in. And so I sent it to a second developmental editor, and she went through the whole thing. So I'm working on those edits. And she was like, you need an epilogue. So I'm working on that. And I really want to have it done at the latest for the fall, but I'm really going to. I started using James Clear's Atomic Habits app. Are you familiar with that book, Atomic
I just
Habits?
literally just read it about probably about 3 or 4 months ago. I finished it, and then since
Oh
then
my.
I've been getting the weekly emails, which reminds me, but I've implemented a lot of that stuff in my life. It really has helped. And that the app though, I was kind of like, think because I'm already using like an Outlook calendar and all these different methods to maintain my habits, couldn't really get
Yeah.
into the app. So I've just kind of like abandoned that for now.
Yeah. So I'm kind of stuck. I really like, I'll show you. I keep like little, this is like my little, I just keep a simple log of things that I actually do, an activity log. So I've decided which things are important to me. What are my priorities? Like my morning self-care routine is, it's kind of extensive, but I have a lot of free time. So I always do my, morning self-care routine, but then I think about what's important to me, like what are my priorities? Peter Drucker is this really famous business management guy, and he always said that if you have more than three priorities, you don't have any, which makes a lot of sense, right? So I'm like, what are the three things that are really going to move the needle in the direction that I want to go in, right? And so it's always like my overall purpose is to be of service to help people that are suffering, whether it's alcoholism, drug addiction, and life. Because let's face it, you and I know that once you get sober, life is still lifey, and so we have to, stress management is a real thing. And personal development, I realized, and then so this brings me to the second thing I'm doing is the Self-Help Junkie podcast. So it's sort of like the next step beyond what happens after you get sober. As soon as I got sober and was introduced to this idea of personal development, they say you want to work on your character defects in 12-step programs, and so is this is like sort of focused on that, but I realized I was a consumer of information with this idea of like, oh, I'm going to give it away and use it in my service because that's my purpose. But after my mother died, I was like, you know what? I need to apply all this stuff to me. Like, my life is precious. And it's like, what am I going to do with it? And I really got into that, like, I need to apply all this stuff to my life. And I realized I was getting lost in this dopamine loop of consuming information, feeling really good about it, and getting excited about it, and talking to people, but not taking action, not actually applying these ideas to my life and taking action. So the premise of the podcast is that we'll pick a topic, talk about why it's important and how can affect change in your life. And then we come up with three action items and then we use SMART goals. So, are you familiar with SMART goals?
I am.
So, they're like specific, measurable, actionable, reasonable, and time bound. So, for me, if it doesn't get on the calendar, it doesn't happen. So we take these three action items, put it on the calendar, we're clear. And then, so it's largely a journaling exercise. But, and then we have a meeting every other week. So the podcast comes out every other week, and then there's a meeting every other week. And it's new, so we've only had one meeting, but it was so good to connect with people who are willing to take action and interested in this kind of stuff. And they're leveraging the law of cause and effect, which is not bound to any sort of moral meaning that we assigned is, it doesn't matter if you're a good person or a bad person. Like if you take actions, you're going to get a result, right? And so the beginning of the next meeting is always, or the next podcast, it's like, did you do your SMART goals? Did you take action? If yes, what were the outcomes, right? If the outcomes didn't affect you positively, then stop doing it. But we want to think about what is moving the needle and do more of that. But I think what's even more interesting is that if you didn't do your action items, what got in the way?
Yeah. Well,
Right.
is it
And
with a
then,
group? Is it with a group of people? Like, yeah.
And so we have a Patreon. It's like a $5 entry just to weed out, people who aren't willing. It's like, I mean, $5. Like, who didn't spend $5? Who spent $5 at the bar? You can't even go to a coffee shop and spend $5. Do you know what I mean? But it's just kind of a filter. Like, we want to filter out the trolls. I think we're at some point we're gonna have to make sure that if somebody shows up that isn't supposed to be on a Zoom call, that we kick them off. And I've been on some weird Zoom calls where inappropriate people show up. But I'm really excited about this because it's sort of like, you're sober now what? Right? And it's like, what are the areas of your life what are we healing from? What character traits are you trying to develop? How are you trying to change your life now that you're sober? So it's not really, sober based, but both my co-host, I have a co-host and she and I are both in recovery. So we do reference our recovery experience, but I'm really excited about it. I really feel like this is something that I can put all my energy behind. Like I want to get the book done, and I'll still do the ODAP podcast, but I think I'm going to be throwing a lot of energy behind this one.
How's the so I was just going to ask that. So is the ODAT podcast going to run concurrently with it, or is that going to take a bit of a backseat now?
No, well, it's funny because I probably have 2 months worth of interviews in the bank, right? Yeah, I still get, I think because it's been around so long that I still get like all the PR people who cover sobriety know about me. So I get a lot of pitches for guests. So it's nice to go through a phase where I interview a lot and then I can kind of set it aside. And then focus on other things. So, because I mean, I really love, I mean, those are my people, right? The sober community, those are my people. And I feel like I still feel like I have a lot of experience to share. So yeah, I'm still doing that.
Have you got like a 12-step community out where you are in Ohio? Have you got meetings there and stuff?
Yeah, I'm in Idaho, actually. It's so funny. Everybody can, it's this, it's confuses the two. Or Iowa. I get Iowa a lot.
It's just America.
It's a huge place. But I do, I have met some people out here in the 12-step community, but it just doesn't they I knew it was gonna be hard to find a community. Like they say that when you move, that it's really hard to find, like they don't do it right, you know, out here.
I've moved three times in recovery, so yeah, I get
Oh, you have. Have you found a 12-step group that really feels like home?
Yeah, because I've been living here now where I live for 8 years. So
Mm.
when I first moved up here, it definitely was like they just don't do it right. Like this isn't good recovery. But as it happens, I mean, I've been one of the meetings that's kind of fairly local to me is probably the best AA meeting that I've ever been to in my life. Like it's just for the vibe, you know. Like it's called it's shout out to Yoxall AA group. It's like in this little church, little church room, back of a church, quaint little church in a beautiful area. It's proper like oldie worldie England, you know, like 1600s type vibe.
Wow.
And when you go into the room, it's all like they have candle. It's really small room, and it's like candle lit, and there's a lot of old timers in there, like 30, 40 years plus recovery. So yeah, it was I found that when I moved up here, and other meetings as well. But I moved from London, so that was my original spot was London. And then I moved to a couple of different places and was abroad for a while. And yeah, just everybody does it differently, but it's you know, so long as they're doing it. It's like you said before, it's about the actions that you take, isn't it, ultimately?
Yeah, it really is.
Now, there's one program, but people do it very differently, and people sponsor differently, and people like, I mean, my whole recovery and my whole ethos towards recovery and you know everything. Like the way that my life is incorporated in my recovery and my recovery is incorporated in my life has just evolved over the 14 years that I've been sober. But it's completely different to how it was when I first got sober. So I don't know what it's going to look like in another 10, 15 years' time because, you know, I don't have a crystal ball. So, you know, and you're 30 years in, so it's got to be working for you.
Yeah, I, you know, it's interesting. I never would have predicted that I would have left California to begin with, and or that I would have like detached from 12-step the way I have. Like it's ingrained in me. I just didn't feel I didn't have like that nourishing feeling out here. And I don't, there's a lot of people with a lot of long-term sobriety, but I don't know what it is. It's like, I think what I sort of have landed on is this idea that, you know, I had deep history with a lot of people in where I was from in San Jose, and I had standing in my community. People knew who I was. And if like, I had a sense of belonging and, but it got to be a little bit too much. Like it was too much. And like, 'cause my husband had been sober for 5 years when I met him, 5 or 6 years when I met him. So he's like 35 years sober. And So people knew who we were, and we had standing, and we're very active, and there was like always something going on. And I had a big group of women that got together regularly, like all the time. And after a while, it just got to be too much. And so moving out here, I was like, oh my God, I can go anywhere I want. Nobody knows who I am. It was a relief, to be honest. But after a while, I started to feel like not sad, but it was the rooms, the fellowship did not have hold that depth and weight that it used to. And I just wasn't feeling it. So I did make some friends out here that are in recovery, but I as a I'm a coach professionally, right? And I still do the podcast. So I talk about recovery all the time. My spiritual practice is really strong. I'm connected with a lot of people. I always do my own work. So I'm in service. So I feel like I'm checking all the boxes, but I just don't go to meetings anymore. Occasionally, people from San Jose will still ask me to chair meetings, which is nice. And so if I go to a meeting, it's usually because I'm speaking.
That's okay. That
Get to talk about my favorite subject with just me.
always.
Still self-centered. But yeah. You know, it's I never would have I if it, I never thought that it would be like this in a million years, but I'm fine. Like everything is all good. Everything is really all good.
I mean, I don't have any opinion on it either way anyway, because it's not my recovery, but it kind of reminds me a little bit of our mutual friend Dennis and his situation, where he was very similarly, like, got into the coaching world and has still got, I mean, I haven't spoken to him for quite a while, but we will be speaking again soon. Similar, just a similar situation where he kind of felt as though, not in an arrogant way, but like he'd kind of outgrown the rooms a little bit, and he's still doing really well. He's still sober. I think he's 20 odd years, might be over 25 years, and doing really well. So I think it's just whatever works for you. There's nothing that says that you've got to go to meetings. I struggle sometimes, but I mean, when I, because I do still go to meetings, but I do struggle sometimes when people kind of say all the cliched stuff, like, if you leave the meetings, you'll die and all that kind of stuff. It just is what it is. People do what they need to do in order to stay well and healthy, and think that people like us haven't just got AA or NA, or we've got loads of different avenues in which we explore our spirituality. There's so many similarities between me and you, because I've literally today just done one of my final exams for my coaching certification.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. So I've just done my knowledge test today, and then tomorrow I've got my observations and my portfolio interview. And then, hopefully, all being well, if that goes well tomorrow, then I'll have my level 5 coaching certification. So that's kind of like the avenue I'm going down as well.
Nice.
And in terms of my recovery, I rely heavily, I always have done, but even more so recently, I rely heavily on meditation. And about 6 months ago, I did Transcendental Meditation
Ooh.
introduction. Yeah, and if I'm honest, Alina, it's been one of the best things that I've ever done, and it so jives with like a recovery mind, because I mean, the top and bottom of it is that they give you a mantra that you learn, and you just do the mantra, you say the mantra repeatedly until the mantra kind of disappears whilst you're meditating, and then you'll go into the pure consciousness kind of realm. And
Okay.
but it just really works for me, because I've got the washing machine head, and that calms it down more or less immediately. So I'm able to, whereas prior to that, all the different meditations that I've done before, I used to find it really difficult to, concentrate on my breathing, or, do the body scan, like all those different types of things, like just mindfulness type meditations. And this has really, really helped. So I feel as though it's kind of like elevated my well-being recently. It's just another tool that I'm using. And then also on top of that, I started doing jiu-jitsu 2 years ago, which has been
I saw that.
Yeah, that's been amazing for my mental health. Because I was depressed, if I'm honest. I mean, when you're talking about your mum dying, and then we're in COVID, and we're in the lockdown, and I stopped doing the podcast. I think more re the reason why I stopped doing the podcast was because my daughter was born, and I just wanted to spend as much time as I could with her, and I just kind of thought, now's a good time to put it on the back burner. And I genuinely thought that I probably wouldn't come back to it. I thought, I've had all the conversations I wanted to have, I've said all the things I wanted to say, and I won't come back to it. But like what you just said before, service is my overall goal, and I really do think that this is an amazing channel for being of service, and these types of conversations are absolutely invaluable. Like, even just off the back of the first podcast I've done in season three, I've had people contacting me saying really like the conversation. Some people, I'm not in recovery, but I really like the conversation, and I could really relate to bits of it and stuff. And that straight away, that just gave me that feeling of like, oh, I'm glad I'm doing it again. I remember now that that was the reason why I did it. It wasn't for me. It's because it's good for other people, and it helps other people. But yeah, I was like, back then, I was feeling quite depressed, and it wasn't until after I started doing jiu-jitsu that I realized quite how negative my mindset had gone, and how low I was feeling. And yeah, I started doing jiu-jitsu, and it's just been amazing. It's been another one of the best decisions I've made. Something that I hope, and I can't foresee me ever not doing, because it's just really, really great for mind, body, and soul. So that's kind of where I'm up to at the moment. Just
That's awesome. My husband and son do jiu-jitsu, and
do they?
there's like this, and there's such an element of brotherhood, but I mean, there is no better medicine for depression than exercise. It totally changes your whole dopamine reward, serotonins, all your neurotransmitters. They say that mood follows action, right? And I had a friend, that would, every time he had a sponsee that called him that was depressed, he'd be like, go for a run and then call me back when you're done. And then they'd go run and call him back and be like, how do you feel? And it's like, I feel amazing. Okay, keep doing that. It's amazing. I know a lot of people who have gotten sober just through exercise, just by managing the underlying condition, which was like, maybe depression, or a lot of people, the alcohol and drugs are just a symptom. They're coping mechanisms. So if you address the core issue, the underlying issues, then sometimes the rest takes care of itself.
Well, that's like my whole shtick with recovery, and with everything that I talk about, both in work and on the podcast and in meetings, is that, for me, it's quite simply that I just use alcohol and drugs as medication. I mean, that it's it's funny that you said it then, what it says in the book. It says that alcohol is but a symptom of the illness. I'm not disagreeing with that as a statement, but at the same time, I prefer to say that it's a medication that I used, because the underlying illness itself is this combination, like, well, restless, irritable, and discontent as a basis. But like we said, like anxiety, depression, just generally feeling low, just generally like not feeling able to kind of like do life. That for me is like the illness. And then, I'll use whatever I need to use in order to change the way that I feel. And if I can find something that does the same thing but is a positive, like jiu-jitsu or going to the gym or running or swimming or anything that's positive for me, then surely that's the direction I should be going in. And
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think people talk about that enough in recovery circles. You hear about, do the steps, ring your sponsor, all that kind of stuff, but people don't talk so much about the other holistic stuff that you need to be doing in order to maintain sobriety and maintain mental wellness. What do you do in terms of exercise and stuff?
I'm sort of in my yoga girl era. I've always had some sort of, I did bar class for a year.
What's
I
that?
don't know if you have bar out there. It's sort of like this exercise methodology that sort of uses principles from like ballet and other disciplines. But it's like small movements, like it's body weight, but it's small movements repeated many times. And Like that, I really got strong from that. And I did it for a year. And then I just was like, I want to try something else. And my husband had been going to yoga and he's like, it's hot yoga. And he was like, oh, you should come. And I'm like, no, nah, I'm good. I really like the bar. And then I was like, one day I was like, yeah, I'll try it. And then I was hooked. And he's like, see, I told you so. I was like, you were right. You were right. And you know, those three little words we all love to hear. You were right. So, yeah. So I got into my yoga girl era and I've been going a lot and it just sort of covers all the bases for me about like being present and working with my body. And I was like, you know, I was super ignorant, like when I was first started going, because I was still doing both. I was doing bar class and yoga. And I asked this gal, I was like, can you really get strong from yoga? And she was like, oh yeah. And I didn't know who I was talking to. Her name is Candy. I dubbed her kick-ass Candy because her classes are so hard. But I'm strong. Like I got muscle. I don't think you can see it on this camera. I got some muscle.
Guns.
I got some guns. Yeah. And like my body feels strong. And you know, and I like the exercises that don't have high impact. I'm not going to be running. I'm not going to be doing CrossFit. Like at 55, that just doesn't seem appealing to me. Like running hurts my joints. But things like yoga and bar class are very gentle, but also they increase my mobility. And then I do a little bit of weights. We have a whole gym here, and then we started doing the cold plunge. We bought one of those big ass cold plunge things that has a cooling system on it. So I can't, my husband, it's winter here in Idaho. It snows, it gets cold. And he's got it down to like 40 degrees. I can't do 40. I think I tapped out at like 55, 50, something like that. I was like, I'm done.
Yeah,
Like it
that's
gets too cold for me. But it's yeah, so. But it's very like being in cold water like that will bring you right into the present moment, right? And the breathing, I've done some holotropic breathing exercises, which are really interesting. So yeah, so I do a lot. I use my body in a variety of ways to help sort of regulate my neurotransmitters, and plus you want to just stay healthy, you know. Just sort of on that optimal health kind of focus right now, in ways that like you were saying with jujitsu, I could see myself doing yoga for the duration, right? Some form of yoga for the duration. There's a gal who, one of the teachers that teaches like the she goes to like where the people are like really old, like in their 80s, you know, and they're doing like chair yoga. I was like, yeah, because I could totally do that. So. Yeah.
did you do sauna as well?
No, we don't have a sauna. There is one at the yoga studio, but well, the yoga I do is hot, so it's up to 108. So I wonder what how much how, is that sauna? How hot is a sauna? Is that
I don't know. I mean, it varies, but I meant to mention that as well, because that's another thing that when you mentioned about the James Clear Atomic Habits, one of the things that I've never done is gym in the morning. So I've always like I'm just not a morning person, but because of the James Clear stuff, I was like, right, my new atomic habit is gonna be that when I drop my daughter off at nursery in the morning, which is about 7:30, 8 o'clock, I'm gonna go straight to the gym. I'm gonna do 30 minutes in the gym, which is anything, just to do it,
show
just
up. Yeah.
show up, yeah. And then I'm gonna go in the sauna for 15 minutes, and then I'm gonna have a cold shower. And that has been my for the last 3 weeks. That has been my pattern. And that's been amazing as well. That's really helped to
You
me.
feel
And
good?
feel amazing. I mean, the cold, I know it's not cold plunge, and I have done cold plunge before, and I'm planning, we're hopefully moving house within the next 6 months or so. And the plan is that I'm going to get an ice bath for outside. And you can get these portable saunas as well. I don't know if you've seen them, where you like zip them up, you like stand inside them and zip them up. So
Oh, interesting.
yeah, they're really cool. Like infrared saunas, they're called. And
Ooh, infrared. Yeah, my husband has been talking about the infrared. Are you have you been following the Andrew Huberman podcast, the Huberman Lab?
I've listened to it every now and then. I usually listen to him on other podcasts, like when he goes on Rogan.
When he's the guest, yeah.
Yeah, I don't listen to him all the time, but you get all that information always filters through all the other podcasts. So, like, what have I been? I've been taking, you know, like all the supplements that he talked about taking. I'm like
Oh, yeah.
all of. I've got like I have about 50 tablets every morning. I feel like I'm in my 90s.
You know what's so funny is you're a Huberman husband. Like there's like this thing about the Huberman husbands because they're doing the infrared and the cold plunge. You're even doing jujitsu. I think he's a jujitsu guy and he's tatted like you are. But you're probably ahead of him.
You know what's really funny as well? Like, ever since I've been going to the sauna, I sit in the sauna now and I'm listening to people have, because I'm usually quite quiet when I'm in there. I don't really join in conversations, but every now and then I do. But I listen to people having conversations and they're all talking about, yeah, are you doing cold showers? Are you doing this? Are you doing that? And everybody's well-being mad now. It's cool. It's really good. It shows that there's like, definitely, ever since COVID, 100% there is. That has kickstarted like a global awakening. Definitely. There's
I couldn't agree more.
a lot going on. There's a lot
Couldn't
going
agree more. Yeah. I know that was really hard for a lot of people. And I almost hate to say it, but it really impacted my life in a positive way.
on. Same.
It really altered how I live my life. It gave me time and space, and financially it was really positive for me. So that I was able to stop doing things I didn't want to do anymore that were not in alignment with who I was. But I do like the optimal health kick that we're all on. I feel like a lot of people are, ditching alcohol, for health reasons. Like it's become fashionable to be sober just because you want to live optimally. And as you get older, I mean, the impact alcohol has on your body gets worse. So I think, just even in the vein of trying to be healthier, alcohol just doesn't play a part for a lot of people.
Now, and there's been like a massive increase in the alcohol-free beers now as well that everybody's
Oh,
drinking.
yeah.
Everybody's like really into that, which, for an alcoholic, it's not the best idea because I think it can kind of give you the taste for it. But you
Yeah,
know,
I have very mixed feelings about it. I know I'm not interested in it,
I've
but
tried it. I've had two separate occasions where I had non-alcoholic beer, and then another time where I had non-alcoholic cider, and both times it made me feel like I wanted more. So I was like, "Nah, this doesn't work for me," because I can see where this leads. I can see where this ends up. But for somebody who's not an alcoholic, who just wants to live, live a bit cleaner and not have everything that comes with the hangovers and all the rest of it, I think it's a great option, and it seems to be very popular, especially with the young lads. That my gym, there's a lot of them that drink the non-alcoholic beers when they go out.
I'm old school 12 step, right? So I was like, they were like, oh, well, you're not going to do fake cocaine. Why would you do fake alcohol? Right? And I was like, oh, good point. And then I was just like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. Right. But then I have talked to people who were like, I'm so glad that there was non-alcoholic beer because then I could go to party. Like they needed something to help them socialize that didn't have alcohol in, but didn't make them feel so different. And when I got sober, I didn't have any friends left. And so when I joined a 12-step community, all my friends were sober. So it was like never an issue. And there was so much, I was 25 when I got sober. There was so much socializing and so many fun things to do with so many young sober. We were having a ball, right? And we weren't getting loaded. So I didn't feel the need, but it's interesting, this sort of like, I don't know how you feel about it. I have such mixed feelings about like this new wave of sobriety that's coming in because on one hand, it's permissive and it's kind of meeting people where they're at. so that they can kind of ease into this idea and lifestyle of sobriety. On the other hand, it's so permissive that there's no clear boundaries. And I'm an all or nothing kind of gal. If I'm in, I am all in. I think the only thing I do in moderation is recovery. That's probably not really true either.
Yeah, but having
But do you know what?
off the back of that though, what you just said, that because I used to see myself very much the same way, that I'm all or nothing, and that there's no middle ground and stuff. But like you just said earlier, you didn't expect that you'd be in a place where you wouldn't be going to meetings like that. Your life's changed dramatically in that sense. And for me, recovery, where I'm at, and I've been probably for a few years, is I literally just each to their own, whatever works. Like I work in the substance misuse field anyway. So see all the different, avenues that people take. And the one thing that that I'm absolutely concrete 100% on is there's no point in trying to persuade someone that your way is the right way. They've got to find that themselves. And as you know, through conversations that we've had previously, I'm more of the Bill Wilson type alcoholic where, and I don't know whether this was he was looking for the easy way out and he's, the easier, softer route, or whether he was just experimental or whatever. But I've always been open to the idea of doing other things when it comes to my recovery. So I did ayahuasca in recovery. I've done psychedelics. I've done mushrooms in recovery. I know that that has led some people to drink again. I know that's led some people to relapse and take drugs again. That's their path. But for me, I had a completely opposite experience. It was like my ayahuasca experience was like having 20 years of therapy in one sitting, and wasn't at all. I mean, I've only just started thinking about this. Happened in 2017, no, 2018. So 4 years ago, what were we in that? So 6 years ago, and
You did ayahuasca 6 years ago?
yeah. And I've never considered doing it again up until recently. So, that suggests to me that it isn't particularly addictive. It's not something that I would say is addictive. But at the same time, I don't recommend people in recovery to do it unless it's something that they've researched and they really think will help and benefit them. So, I'm just very open-minded to it. And I get what you're saying about we're in a very permissive situation at the moment. And I think the answer to that is just people will come to their own conclusions, really. There's going to be the faction of people that really want a rigid, disciplined, controlled type of program, that they know exactly where they stand with it. They know exactly what is permitted and what isn't, and that's what's going to work for them, and that's absolutely fine. And then there's going to be everything, outside of that as well, where people will say, well, I don't see this as a problem, or this is cool for me. And it's whatever works. At the end of the day, I just think if you're mentally well, if you can genuinely say that you're happy and that you're mentally well, and that that you're not anxious and you're not depressed, and that you're not struggling with life, then whatever's working for you, but it's all good.
I've had to let go of this. So I had to recognize that I had decades of conditioning of thinking a certain way, and there was a lot of the old timers, it's like we don't take nothing no matter what mentality. And some people really take that to the extreme, but I sort of equate it to there are like a couple of things. Like if I've had to have surgery, I had to have knee surgery one time, and had to take narcotics, right? And I had a plan, and was able to do it safely, and I can see that psychedelics are like spiritual surgery. Like it can access things that you can't get to with traditional therapies, and so I honor that as well. And what was the other point I was going to make? I don't know. I just feel like I've sort of let go of this. I'm where you're at, where it's like everybody has to figure out what is right for them. And I think even, like from a spiritual perspective, whatever you go through is what you were meant to go through, right? If Like we have these opportunities. If somebody relapses, maybe there's a lesson in that. If they survive, like some people don't, like you and I have been around long enough where some people don't survive. We've seen it. And I think that's where the fear comes in, is people are like, you need to be abstinent no matter what, you know. But I don't think that's necessarily, I don't think that's healthy either. I had a girlfriend who had really severe back pain, and she was in, and she had one of those rigid, her husband was very rigid, like nothing, no matter what. Right. And she had severe back pain, and she was in so much, she like literally passed out from it. Like she was like in crippling pain. And she's like, okay, is now is it okay to take medication? I mean, it was like too far. But I think people who have those really severe boundaries find safety and peace in that. And so that's where they need to live. And that's fine if that's what you need to do, but don't impose that on anybody else is the thing. Like you can say, this is how I am, and this is what I did, and this is how it worked for me. And if somebody hearing that is like, I'm exactly like you, so I'm going to do what you did to get that outcome. Like that makes sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And
But
there's like the question of like, if you believe in God or you believe in any form of higher power or something that's looking after you, would God want you to be in pain? Would God want you to
yeah.
be passing out through the pain?
Yeah, it's like, what are we doing here?
Exactly. Like surely there
on.
is. And if a psychedelic can help you to actually have an experience of God, would God not want you to have that experience and say hello? Like that was my experience. My intention was to kind of meet God, so to speak, and
Yeah.
that was what happened. I
Did
went.
you do, so you did ayahuasca. Did you do that in the UK or did you have to travel?
Travel. I went to Spain to do it.
Oh, Spain. Okay.
Yeah,
And just one ceremony, or was it like a series?
two. So
Two,
there was
okay.
the first ceremony was like a full on 12 hours. And then we had a break, had some food, and then chilled for a little bit, and then we did another ceremony. But in the second ceremony, I only drank a little bit the second time, and everybody has different experiences of how the medicine communicates with them, but mine was very like it was very direct communication. It was like the mother was talking to me the whole way through. And the
Mama
second
Ayahuasca, that's what everybody says.
yeah. And the second time I drank, she literally said, "You don't need this now." She said, "Like you've experienced what you needed to experience. You've experienced what you came for. So
Yeah.
don't take any more." So that was it. I didn't take any more. And then I went home, and then I wrote a book about it. I just
Oh,
wrote it
yeah.
all down. So
Yeah.
yeah.
What was the overall message from the like, what did you need to hear?
Well. Before I went for the ceremony and the weeks leading up to it, you have to do like a detox and everything, and they also ask you to take in with you in three intentions. So
Okay.
at the time, my wife and I, who's my wife now, had split up and were separated, and so my first intention was whether that relationship was the right one for me. The second one was to kind of like deal with my parental issues, stuff from childhood, all the trauma stuff. And then the third one was that I wanted to meet God. So the first part of it was going through this whole, what was like therapy, dealing with, and it dealt with all my relationships. It dealt with my relationship with my ex-wife. It dealt with my relationships with people throughout my life, grandparents, aunties, uncles, you name it. And then it dealt with my parents as like the big one at the end. And then after that had been dealt with, I just went into, like you hear kind of like, and I know this will sound a bit grandiose, but this was just my experience. Like you hear the kind of the enlightening experiences of like the Buddha going into Nirvana and
Yeah.
well, that was kind of what happened. It was kind of like all of a sudden, once the pain had gone, like all that stuff had been dealt with, I was just engulfed by this white light, and it just and then I just disappeared. It wasn't like I was observing being in this place. I was just in there, I was just gone. And I was gone for, I don't know how long I was gone for, but the guy that was next to me, it was going through his own experience, who became a good friend of mine, Luke, he just said, "You were just slumped over for probably like almost like a couple of hours." So he said, you
But awake, like you were awake, but just sort of relaxed.
I said I was like gone. It was like completely gone. Like he said, it was almost like you were dead. It's like you just weren't there. And
He
then
poke you, make sure you're okay.
he said he held my hand at one point, and I held his hand back. He said, I don't know whether you were conscious of it. And then I came back to myself and had all this, all this incredible
That
kind
sounds
of.
amazing.
I'll send you the book. I wrote it obviously in detail, so I'll send it to you and you can have a read and see what
I
you
would
think.
love to read it. Yeah.
Funny thing was, I think I interviewed about 8 or 9 people for the book, for their stories and their perspective. And when I put the book together and I put all their stories together, all the stories intertwine. It's really weird.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah.
There's stuff going on, but
Yeah.
it was going on for all of us.
Yeah.
It was really weird. So yeah.
Dude, we are all connected. We are all connected, and it's just amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what was it like to, 'cause I've thought about it, and I think one of the things about ayahuasca that kind of freaks me out is like Gabor Mate is on the board of Soltara in Costa Rica, and I was like, oh, that'd be a cool place to go do it. Because it kind of has his stamp of approval on it. I've done a lot of research and stuff. I actually talked to a couple of people who've been there. And what kind of concerns me is the fact that you're in a room with like a whole bunch of people and everyone's tripping out. Everyone's tripping balls, right? So somebody is like whining. I mean, not whining, but if somebody is like processing. Sorry, that sounded a little judgy. But do you
They're
know
all
what I mean?
whining in the corner.
They're
Why?
all whining and sniveling, and it's so annoying to my experience.
They're all messing up my experience of it.
You're harshing my vibe.
Actually, funny that you should say that. That is like a big part of it. So there was one woman that was going through, and after when I spoke to her afterwards, I said to her, "It sounded like you were." I said, "It sounded like you were giving birth." And she
Oh,
said,
God.
I was in my experience, I was rebirthing myself.
Whoa.
Yeah. So there's a lot of that going on. There's a lot of noises
Is
going
it
on.
distract? Is that
No,
distracting?
it's not. It's like, I mean, it may be different in different places. I suppose it depends on the setting, doesn't it? But it was like being in the most primal circumstances. It was like this is what they were doing thousands of years ago, on the savannah, in the jungle, this is what they were
Yeah.
doing. It was like so primal, and it just felt like it's just something. I mean, as I said to you before, normally I wouldn't recommend it to anybody and say, oh yeah, you should do it, but because I know you the way I know you, I would say yes. I
Okay.
genuinely believe that you're the type of person who would just get so much from it, and I think that it's a transfer. I mean, it's a transformational experience that you can't describe it until you've had it. And once you've had it,
Yeah.
the one thing that, I mean, whether you believe in a higher power or not, the one thing that for me that was undeniable is that there is a God. Like that, there is definitely like. There is a creator, there is a creative force in the universe, which is where all of this comes from. And that part of it was the absolutely undeniable. And the fact that it also kind of dealt with my stuff to do with Adele, my partner at the time, who then I then married. I mean, because I came back from that experience, and when we got back together, and I said to her, like I said, like the medicine, she was like, Mother Ayahuasca told you to get back together with me. And I was like, yep. The medicine basically said that she is the one, and the reasons why it wasn't explicitly said, but the reasons why, which I came away with, were because like she is like my twin flame. She's like
Oh, yeah.
all of that stuff. Like we are mirrors to each other, and everything that that goes on that drives me mad about her, and everything that I love about her, is all the stuff that we need to work on, and is like it's just a mirror of each other.
Yeah, that's
Helps as well.
beautiful.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I feel like the reason I'm still so intrigued by it is that, listen, I've been doing 30 years of therapy, hypnosis, CBT. I've done EMDR. I had some childhood sexual abuse, and that stuff runs. I was five. It like
Same.
shaped who I was, like from the very beginning of identity. It just shaped who I was. And then not feeling safe growing up, and my feelings were never a priority in the house, like dissociation and detachment. And really what it all boils down to, and I've really been having like these revelations recently about my self-worth. Like I've been teaching a class on self-esteem for about 2, 3 years now, because I have this deep belief that we only allow into our lives what we believe we deserve on this subconscious level, which is why I got into hypnosis. I was like, I'm going to do some positive brainwashing here and like, change the default mode network and blah, blah, blah. And it's, I've done a ton of research on psychedelics, and definitely psychedelics will help you alter your default mode, right? And like you said, 20 years of psychotherapy in a single evening. It's the reoccurring story that I've, and so I'm like, man, if you could solve the one problem that takes care of all others, it's around identity and what you believe you deserve. And it's so interesting that, I have a strong head knowledge of God. Like I'm all about the cause. I'm a science girl. I really want to, be woo-woo, but at the end of the day, it's like I need a God of evidence. And so I have evidence, but I don't feel it in my core. You know what I mean? And so that's kind of, and even Bill Wilson, he got sober in 35, was it? And but it was doing psychedelic experiences in the 50s. And he wanted to make it part of 12 step for this, so people could have a spiritual experience. And I think the reoccurring through my whole sobriety has been this distrust of a higher power, right? Looking to God, because I kind of grew up in the Christian religion and this paradigm that God was going to fix me or save me. And the presupposition of that is that I'm broken and flawed, right? And so I bought into this idea that I am broken and flawed. And so all the work that I've been doing has been to heal and evolve. And a lot of that is valid. Like as human beings, we always evolve, right? So, but there's a difference between growing and evolving and trying to get fixed from being broken. Do you know? So that's something that really intrigues me, is I want to have that really deep spiritual experience of knowing that I can trust this higher power, that I am loved. I am love itself, right? A creation is not separated from the creator, right? And at the end of the day, if I was going to define God, I would just say love, like that energy of love, the dynamic, just for simplicity's sake. And of course, there's a little more to it, but that's kind of how it makes sense in my mind. And so I am really interested in this idea of having an ex like a deep spiritual experience to connect with that and to know my worth. Like if I could brainwash myself of anything, it would be to know my worth to my core, because I still feel myself, I feel resistance. And like in writing the book has been a struggle, right? Just getting it done. And I just find myself stopping myself along the way. And I've had some recent kind of awakenings around that is a self-worth issue, because I'm so performance-based, like achievement-based identity. And it's so ingrained in me. It is so hard to separate that I am worthy just because I am, not because of what I do.
It's really
Right. And
difficult to
yeah.
overcome, isn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah, it's been a process to, get my husband on board, because he's, 12-step ingrained. The funny thing is that when he was 18 years old, he had a heroic dose of mushrooms, and he's been sober ever since.
So that worked for him.
We've talked about it, and he goes, I got my message.
That, but
He
that's
doesn't.
that's what I was getting at before, is that, and you just said that you want to know that you are loved. That's what it kept saying. She kept saying to me during my experience, was whenever it dealt with anybody, whether it was my wife, whether it was my ex-wife, whether it was my friends, she kept saying to me, "You are loved. They love you. My stepchildren, you know that you are loved. They love you." Because there's this thing in us that we don't believe that other people actually love us, and
Yeah.
I think that, you know, you can go into all the psychological reasons for that. I mean, being abused when you were younger, obviously, that somebody breaks your trust. You know, for me, having a dad who was an active alcoholic, who, although he was there physically, wasn't there emotionally, and
Yeah.
that feels as though the trust has been broken. That feels like you're abandoned within the relationship. Therefore, you don't trust that people actually love you. Does this person actually love me? Because they're there, but they're not giving me any of their actual emotional, you know, their emotions,
Yeah.
their presence. And it affects you in this knock-on effect way throughout your life. And then you add alcohol and drugs on top of that, and every relationship that you get into, it's not a real emotionally vulnerable relationship. It's a relationship built on, for me especially, it was relationships built on, what can I get out of this relationship? What can this person do for me? And, you know, and occasionally when I was feeling guilty and shameful, what can I do for them? You know, it's like, it
Right, yeah.
doesn't work, you know. And to have the experience with ayahuasca, which I don't think that anything else can actually reach down into the core of you in the same way that that does. I mean, I was speaking to a good friend at jiu-jitsu actually the other night. Shout out to Tipper, who we were talking about doing DMT. So, you know, just the straight out of the pipe DMT, because that's something that I'm considering doing as well. And I said, "What's it like?" And he said, "Well," he said, "for me, it was like, you know that you've got all these issues, and you know that, like, you know, I'm a bit OCD, I'm a bit this, I'm a bit that, but you don't know the where it comes from." He said,
Right.
"It was like the DMT took me into myself and just basically, got the hard drive and just plugged things in and showed me where all these things come from, and just kind of like defragged the computer, so to speak." And
Yeah.
then when he came back from it, he was like more comfortable. It was like nothing had really changed. Like it hadn't meant that all of a sudden he wasn't this way and he wasn't that way anymore. It just meant that he was like, "Oh, okay, I get where that comes from now. And I'm actually comfortable. I accept that that's me. And I can probably do something to change it if I want to." So I think that's a massive thing, because in recovery, well, in life in general, you kind of live most of your life on autopilot, and you keep doing things over. Like, I keep eating still to this day, and you'll probably laugh at this because we spoke about this numerous times before. To this day, I still eat chocolate. Like, it comes to my mind, and I go, "Nah, I'm not gonna have it." And then I just have it, or I walk into a shop and I'll just pick something up, and before I know it, the chocolate's in my mouth. And we're not talking a little bit of chocolate; we're talking like binge-worthy chocolate, like five Cadbury's cream eggs in one go. Now, I know on a cognitive level, I know that that is not good for me physically.
Right.
Makes me feel shit after I've eaten it, emotionally and mentally. In fact, it makes me a bit fuzzy headed. I can wake up in the morning after I've had a bit of a chocolate binge and feel like I'm hungover. Like, I know all these things, and I've known them
Yeah.
15 years, I'm still doing it. So why am I still why am
Why? Yeah.
I still, the only answer I've got for that is it still gives me something. There's still something that it gives me, whether it's just the dopamine hit, or whether it's, you know, helping me to not feel my feelings, whatever it is, it still gives me something. And I have a lot of faith in the fact that these psychedelics can help you to overcome those patterns in a way in
Yeah.
which you might not necessarily be able to overcome those patterns without them. I mean,
Yeah.
you might, but you also might not. So yeah, I think it's good that it's kind of part of the conversation. And I get it.
Yeah.
I get that some people are just like, "No, would never even consider it." And that's fine as well, you know. It's like,
I have a story to tell you. So what really brought it home for me is I have a son who is 23, and he was suicidal in high school. And we got him the help he needed. He got medication, and he's been good ever since. So he's, I think he was like a junior, sophomore or junior in high school when he was on medication. So that's a long time, like 7 or 8 years he's been on medication. And then, so he's in college now at the local at Boise State University. And I get a text message. My friend's daughter was going to school with him. She reached out to me. She said, "I'm worried about him. The things that he's saying, some of the things he's saying was very concerning." And he was basically having like an episode, like a depression episode that was pretty serious. And I was terrified. I was like, "Oh my God, not again. Here we go again." And I had had somebody on the podcast. He was a Stanford med student. He was about to graduate. This guy, Josh Turner, I don't remember, Tanner Turner. Anyway, an incredible person who had some psychedelic experiences that changed his life. And he's like, "That's what I want to do after I graduate medical school from Stanford." I was like, "This guy's pretty legit, right? Tons of research." And anyway, so when my boy got into trouble, I reached out to him and I was like, "You have to help my boy. Like, what do we got to do?" So I sent him out to California, and they kept him safe, and he had three heroic doses, which is 5 grams, right? So he, and I did it. I've been doing a ton of research just because of the podcast, and I saw that Netflix series, How to Change Your Mind, with Michael Pollan, and there were some other things. It just kept coming and coming and coming to me. So I was like, okay. So I sent him to California. He had these literally life-changing experiences, and he came home. I was tempted to say he came back a different person, but really what happened is he came back himself. He came back more himself than I had ever seen. And he's been off of the medication ever since. Like, he doesn't take depression medication anymore. He was
Amazing.
on it for 7 years, let's say, and he's been doing well. And so I think it's almost coming up on a year, and he thinks that maybe it's time to do a sort of check-in dose. I don't know if that means, like, maybe have another experience just to sort of set him right again. And which makes sense, right? If we think about, mental fitness, like, you wouldn't go to jiu-jitsu once and expect to stay in shape forever, right? You wouldn't eat a salad and be like, "I'm good." It's like a continual maintenance thing. So I kind of get that aspect of it. But it's just fascinating. Like, it like literally it changed. Like, I don't like he faced his depression. He like literally said, "I faced my depression and I beat it." And when he's telling the story, he has tears in his eyes, like such a deep sense of relief. Like, this had been a weight on him since he was probably in, we call it elementary school. So when he was really young, he had always had like this weight, and it was gone. Do you know what I mean? So it was just, how could I not
Well,
be influenced?
I mean that I can speak to that because I was on antidepressants myself 2 years up until about a year ago, and the fit that you know going into a depression, going on antidepressants, and then coming off them again, my experience of it is that it works, like it helps. Obviously, it alleviates the symptoms of depression, but there's also negative side effects to it as well. Like the fatigue that came with it, the like sweating, like not experiencing the full range of emotions. So
Right, yeah.
like it eliminates the negative emotions, but it also eliminates the higher level positive emotions as well. So, and I've come off the back of that now, and this is the reason why, similar to your son, in the sense that like he's thinking about, checking in again with possibly with mushrooms or whatever, is because life's difficult, like life is hard, and there's a reason why people, use these psychedelics in a way where they might once every couple of years have a ceremony, or once a year or whatever. Like they use them in that way so that you can kind of just reset.
Yeah.
Deal with what's been going on for the last couple of years, reset, and then start again. And to have had the experience of dealing with his depression, I think is absolutely amazing. That's what I've never. I think when I had my ayahuasca experience, there was this point at which something came, and it kind of came in the form of like a snake or something like that, and I turned away from it, and I think that that was my opportunity to do that, to really, really kind of face that. I don't think I really felt, I think I dealt with the stuff that I wanted to deal with, but I
You
think,
weren't, maybe you weren't ready yet.
yeah, I don't think I was. And then when I did mushrooms, and I did the psilocybin, I did that twice with Luke, once in a forest in Manchester and another time round here where I live now. And as I came to the end of that experience, the overwhelming feeling was kind of like, it was feeling a bit druggy. Like I was a little bit like, I don't really want to feel like this anymore. So I was kind of like, I said to Luke afterwards, I said, I'm done with this for now. And I haven't had the desire to do that again. So that isn't a route that I would go down again, I don't think. I wouldn't just like one random weekend say, yeah, let's do some mushrooms. Let's like do
No,
it.
no.
Doesn't seem the right to me. The other,
Intention matters.
yeah.
Intention matters a lot.
Yeah. So I think I mean, it seems like you're primed to be in a situation where it's gonna happen, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
What's your husband said about it? Is he
He's
against it?
supportive. He's supportive now. We had to have some very uncomfortable conversations, but now he's supportive. So I have the green light.
Is he still going to meetings?
No, he's not going either. He probably hasn't been to a meeting in over a year. But we're good. I mean, are we, listen, our relationship, we celebrated 25 years of marriage a year or two ago. We went to Rome and Paris, and it was super cool. And we're just like in such a good place. But we have been for a while. Like if you're in recovery and you're like, we managed to be like, and we're good. Like we're still really close. And I know that resentment is the thing, is the wedge that drives people apart, right? And I think because we had been practicing like 4-step, 10-step type stuff, constant self-reflection, inventory, taking personal responsibility type of thing, and always, words of affirmation for each other and acts of kindness, all that stuff. Like we're super tight. Like we're really close. And so life is good. So, but I like for me, like I still, I just, he didn't have the childhood experiences I did. Like he didn't have like this mind that was set on how do I fix myself? Like I've just been on this hamster wheel for 30 years of how do I fix myself? Since the day I can remember, it's like I just wanted to be different, like someone else.
Yeah.
So I really think this would help. I think it would help. I don't really know what I need to experience, but from everything that I hear, it's like, it's good to have an intention, like your intentions matter. And I'm not interested in getting high. As a matter of fact, that kind of freaks me out a little bit, but I'm interested in finding peace at this
It'll
point.
show you what you need to do. I mean, the thing is that it doesn't fix anything. All it does is it shows you, like in the same way that counseling, you have those aha moments and you're like, oh shit, like that's what I need to work on, or that's something that I need to do, or that's a person that I need to make amends to, or whatever. It does exactly the same. It just shows you, right, this is what, this is your reality, and this is what you need to do in order to move forward. And some of those lessons don't come straight away. I mean, when I was talking to Tipper the other day, we were saying that, 6 months later, you could be sat eating your breakfast, and all of a sudden, you get a flashback, and it's something that you needed to remember, and like, oh,
Yeah.
that means that, and I need to do that. So, it's not just an overnight fix by any stretch of the imagination.
No, yeah.
The best
Very
things
true.
never are.
Yeah. Isn't that is a gospel truth.
Listen, it's been amazing catching up.
Yeah.
Thank you for for joining me for a chat.
Yeah, no, it's been good. Wait, when you end the recording, don't hang up because I want to make sure we book some time with you as well.
Okay, cool. Definitely. Okay, well, I will.
It's been great hanging out with you. Thank you so much for. I'm so glad you're doing the podcast again.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, and I couldn't think of another person that I'd want to catch up with. So, yeah,
Nice.
thanks a lot.
Thanks.